our provision regarding protection, for them also to be able to look at these issues and be able to give permits on those issues. That's the issue around basic conditions of employment act and children, our involvement in terms of that of the department. Now, I'm not sure whether members want to finish the presentation in all areas before asking questions, or they want to ask questions after issue is placed.
Yes, please.
Finish the presentation.
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Now, I'm going to go to Employment Equity Act. As I said, Employment Equity Act was mainly dealing with people with disability, our activities around with people with disability. Now, just for a background on Employment Equity Act, which this Parliament passed and in 1997-6, around there, promulgated in 1998, we developed around 2000 regulations, and we amended those regulations in 2000. We developed good code of good hope and for disability, which were published in 2002. This code of good hope, code of good practice, is to assist employers in recruitment, in the employment of people with disability, because employers make all sorts of excuses when it comes to this category of workers. We've developed technical assistance guidelines on the employment of people with disability, also as to assist them in this area. Now, just to unpack some of the key principles in the Employment Equity Act relating to disability, just to take members a little bit step back. The tag that we've developed is to assist employers and employees, including trade unions. Remember, Employment Equity Act is an enabling legislation. It's a legislation that should be enforced and looked after by both employers, employees, and trade unions. And as a department, we often view that it doesn't matter. Even if we put an inspector in each factory, if we do not have a buy-in of the stakeholders in employment, we are not going to be able to succeed in this process. Therefore, it is important that employers buy in. It is important that employees exercise the opportunities and demand their rights that are in terms of the law. It is important that trade unions play their part. We are yet to see in South Africa, unfortunately, I'm not advocating strike, a strike by trade unions because an employer has failed to use and implement the Employment Equity Act in terms of disability. We get to see that. I'm not saying that that's a good thing, but I'm saying when at least there's that issue on the table, then you will know that stakeholders are taking the issue seriously. The tech make it possible to interpret the act and the code. When you use the tech, you are able to understand both the act and the code. It provides a practical guideline on how to implement affirmative action. Now, there's been a lot of news recently around affirmative action. But we believe that the tech, if employers look at the tech and the code and implement them properly, they should be able to deal with all the barriers that they identify in terms of employment equity, and especially in terms of people with disability. Some of the key elements of the code, of the code, include the definition of disability. There's this big issue about what is disability. When we talk about disability, what do you mean? I'm wearing glasses, so that means that I'm disabled. And employers there, when they do not implement the act, go back and use the issue of definition and say, well, can we define to us what disability? Therefore, we introduce the tag to deal with that problem of a definition. It explains what reasonable accommodation is. As I said, it explains and assist employers in terms of recruitment and selection of people with disability. He explains and assist employers on the issue of medical and psychological testing. When should you do this and what process should you follow? And it assists in education and awareness for employers. In training and career development, the issue of termination of employment, how do you terminate employment when it comes to disability? The issue of employee benefits, confidentiality and disclosure, and it assists in terms of the employment equity plan. Now, the implementation of this code in the tech, we produced different formats of the code in the tech in different languages, including in Braille, because we believe that it's important that even people with disability should be able, if you've got a problem with sight, you should be able to read the code and understand the right. It's available in auto text, in large print, in electronic format, so that all the people that are affected by it are able to access it. We've conducted a seminar during the last financial year where material was distributed to various organizations and disability with on disability and interested groups, giving them this material, because it's not important, it's not enough to have this and keep it in our archives in the offices in Pretoria, but to make sure that the people out there receive the material. We've conducted seminars, as we said. We've trained our provincial staff in the offices in order to enable them to advocate and assist employers and employees in the application of the code, the text, and the law. We're giving ongoing support to employers, both nationally and provincially, on the code and course and the test. We are in continuous contact with the Office of the Status of Testing with Disability, the President, and Disability Organization on these issues in order for us to be going the same direction, giving the same message. In an effort, we also push the issue of mainstreaming of disability to eliminate unfair discrimination and promote affirmative action measures. We believe that disability forms an integral part of our entire process of enforcement in the DG review process. Now, just to explain, this is for the first time in South Africa implementing the DG review process. The DG review is Section 43 in the Act, where it gives the DG power to analyze employment equity plans of companies, to assess it, and give recommendations to companies on their performance. We have visited six companies in 2006, and in 2007 we're planning by the end of the financial year to visit 33 companies. All of these companies are listed in the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. In fact, all of them, of the 33, are in the top 100 of the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. We visited ABSA, that's the name of you, we visited Woolworths, we visited Investec, we visited Digvest, we visited Netco. In all of them, unfortunately, what we find out, people with disabilities are on the bottom. In fact, in all of them, they do not have plans. Where they've got plans, there are no plans for people with disabilities. If they do have plans and they cater for people with disability, they are in the lowest level. Employers do not, I mean, if you look at the Employment Equity Act, it talks about planning in terms of levels. It talks about top manager, senior manager, professional. Now, in terms of disability, they are all lumped, unskilled, in the lower level. We have not seen anywhere where a company says, in terms of our Employment Equity Plan, in the next 5 years, we want to have one person who's disabled in the top management absolute of our company. We haven't seen that. We're not saying that they are already employed. We're talking about the plan. Remember, a plan can be 1 to 5 years. Now, we have not seen it. All those companies that we hit there. Now, we're not talking small companies. We're not talking Mickey Mouse companies. We're talking big companies here. As I've mentioned, the upside of this world, the Netcos, the Investec, the Feedback, the Group. I mean, we're talking about those big companies. We've seen plan of them, and we are in that process now of interrogating their plan, discussing with them. The DG is going to be giving his recommendation in terms of the plan. If they do not implement those recommendations in terms of the law, then we've got to enforce those recommendations through the court process. Now, that has been our activities in terms of people with disabilities. On top of that, I think we've got to indicate that every department we've got, what we call, we inherited, I mean, I'm sure because of fellow people know, the old government set up what they call sheltered employment factories. The name is not that good, but the purpose, what it does, it adds value to people with disabilities. Possibly we've got to look and see whether the minister has already indicated this, whether the name should not be changed so that it reflects progressively to the people with disabilities. Sheltered means you hide somewhere. Now we've got about 12 factories in the country. These factories employ people with disabilities. They offer short or long to long-term employment for people with disabilities, especially to those with very severe disabilities or limited education. Doesn't matter your disability, it could be mental disability, it could be physical disability. We've got people, in fact, around about 1,100 people employed in this factory. In Cape Town here, possibly members of parliament might want, or this committee just trying to pay a visit to one of these factories and see them. We've got one in Epping, we've got one in a place called the Ndabeni. People from Cape Town would know this area. There's a place called somewhere in Ndabeni, in Nyoni Street. It's in Nyoni Street, somewhere there. I'm sure if the committees are interested, it can be arranged for them to visit and see how people with disability are working in these factories. They produce tables for schools, desks, chairs, pillowcases, body bags, overalls for companies. The work is divided into textile area, sewing, textile, carpentry, and metalwork. They do welding and all sorts of people. As I said, these companies collectively employ 1,100 people. They are in seven of the 9 provinces of the country. The 2 provinces that do not have is Northwestern and Mpumalanga. I'm sure it's because they are closer to you to Gauteng, because they are in Gauteng, around about, I think, not 4 Gauteng of these around Johannesburg and Pretoria. But the intention is to open also factories in those areas. 1,100 is not a big number, but it's a job. The intention is to try their capacity in this sector. Presently, these sectors are working at 20 to 40% capacity. In the past, these sectors had what they called in treasury preferable procurement data, where government would, if Department of Education wants school chairs and desks, was compelled to buy from that sector in the past. But that status has been removed now. The factory must compete with other companies in the open labor market for business. We try to see whether can we reverse that decision and give them the status, because there is capacity there to produce more and employ more people with disability in the factory. And it's a struggle. Possibly the members of parliament can assist in that struggle. After they visited the factory, they've seen the capacity in all the process, and that will allow us to employ more people, and that will allow the factories to open in other provinces. There is a problem with the factories as they stand now. The demographic of the factories in terms of employment equity are not what we'd like to be, but that's a historic problem, because these factories, as we said, they were inherited from the past. But they are set, as we say, they are set to the good people. The budget that has been allocated on these factories, I mean, we're spending around about, Parliament is spending around about 48 million, keeping these factories together, which is a lot of money. Now, we have not dealt with the budget on the other section, the BCA and the other section, because the budget around employment, people with disability around employment disability included in our inspection. When we go out to do inspection, we do inspection for the average. Now it's difficult to say when we go out and do work, we're only doing it for disability. Yeah. That's why on those sections we have not broken it down and say this is the budget. Because it's included, it's mainstream in terms of what we do on a daily basis. We are able on this one to say exactly how much we're spending on this factory. As I've said, that is about 48 million for this financial year. It's going to be increased in the next financial year because we are busy in a turnaround strategy. We want the factories to be profitable on their own without depending on money from fiscal. And we've got a period that is set in the next 5 years. We want to see employment increasing in the factory. We want to see the demographic of the factory changing. We want to see the factories being able to sustain themselves in terms of the products that are produced. I will give over to my colleague, Chair Benedict, to deal with skills around the areas of skills.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of Parliament. I will continue with the presentation with regards to skills. In terms of the background to skills development, enhancement of skills in the workplaces and for the unemployed is part of the Department of Labor Program of Action as mandated by the Skills Development Act. And then to operationalize the Act, the NSDS, which is the National Skills Development Strategies 2001 and 2005, and the second one, 2005-2010, that we are currently implementing, were launched to ensure achievement of this mandate. In the National Skills Development Strategy, there are principles and intermediates to ensure that designated groups benefit from skills interventions by teachers and other skills development institutions. Now, in terms of the strategy prescribes the target for learners entering the learning program. And then we have, for those learners that are entering into learning program, 85% of them should be black, and 54% of them should be women, and 4% should be people with disabilities. This, honorable members, must take note that this is not regulated, but we are ensuring that this is being implemented through the skill development system, because it's only in the strategy. We have as well mechanisms to support and monitor the implementation and ensure corrective measures are in place given the extent of the achievement. Now, in terms of success indicator 2.7 of the National Skills Development Strategy, is that the workers should to be trained and achieve at the level 1 to 4. And the achievement today for 2006-07 financial year is that 46,055 people have been trained on average level 1 to 4. And of those trained, of the 46,000 trained, 5,527 thereof, which is 12%, is you. And then 2,303 of them, which is 0.5%, is people with disabilities. And those that have completed the other level 1 to 4 program, 1,248 thereof. And again, 12%, which is 1,530, is you, and 765, which is 0.6%, is people with disabilities. This, I think, honorable members, one needs to indicate that in the main, the people that are in welcome, in the main, we find that they are above 8,000 as defined by the definition for youth. And then in terms of success indicator 2.8 of the strategy, workers assisted to enter and successfully complete programs including learnerships and apprenticeships, we have currently for the financial year 2006-2007, workers that have entered is 57,577, and those that are youth is 24,182, which is 42% thereof. This, I think one needs to just reflect on, is that in the past, honorable members, the strategy, the first strategy, success indicator 5.1 of the previous strategy, was focused on youth. But the current strategy is broad, it includes even people beyond age 35. And of those that have entered, 576 of them, which is 1%, is people with disabilities. And the learners that have completed various learning programs in this success indicator, 1,423 of them have completed, and 8,355 are youth, which is 9%, and 1,072, which is 0.5%, is people with disabilities. This, in terms of the sexual discrimination, is what we call employed workers, those people that when they enter into learning programs are in employment. In terms of success indicator 3.1, this refers to the unemployed people trained, 60% of training should be quality assured, and 70% of trained people should be placed into employment and self-employment or social development programs, including expanded public work programs. Currently, we have 1,118,153 of the unemployed trained, and whereas 90,691 were placed in different programs. That's our plan. And 40,238 of them, which is 26%, are youth, and then 2,271, which is 2.3%, is people with disabilities. And of those placed, 23,048 is youth, and 2,058, which is 2.5%, is people with disabilities. In terms of budget allocation, because this one is the budget that is directly from the Department of Labor, not from teachers. With the others, teachers are using discretionary grants, but with this one specifically from the NSF fund, direct from the department, and in terms of the social development funding window. And then 334 million has been allocated for the training, and currently, at the end of the March 2007, 277.5 million have been utilized for this purpose. first indicator, 4.1 of the strategy, is that unemployed people are assisted to enter and exit 50% successfully complete programs, including learnership and apprenticeship. This is similar to success indicator 2.8, but success 2.8 focuses on people who are already in employment, whereas success indicator 4.1 focuses on people when entering into any program are unemployed. And in this case, for 1,011 unemployed learners have entered learning programs, of which 27,887, which is 58%, are youth, and 1,230, which is 3%, is people with disabilities. And those that have completed is 1,251 unemployed learners have successfully completed learning programs, which includes learnership and apprenticeships and other skills programs. And 59%, which is 7,228, is youth, and 245, which is 2%, is people with disabilities. This includes teacher discretionary learning grant funding and includes as well the NSF critical funding window, where in 317 million was already allocated for NSF projects. And currently, as we speak, NSF has advertised URSC request for proposal in regards to development of artisans, whereby 300 million is being allocated. In terms of critical skills, we have also mothers. And with regard to this one, the beneficiaries, 1,148 of the beneficiaries received mothering provision through NAFA. The funds have been allocated by NSF, which amounts to 32 million, but the 1,000 of those number, 1,148 is 100% special use, and then 1,138 is people with disabilities. The reason you see the 99% in regard to this one is that the focus this year for 2006 and 2007 by the NSF was to assist people with disabilities. That is why the budget is in this regard 99%. In terms of success indicator 4.2, learners in critical skills programs covered by sector agreements from FET and ACT institutions are assisted to gain work experience and at least 70% find placement. This relates to those workers learners that are in colleges that require work experiential learning for them to get a qualification. 8,695 learners entered workplace to gain work experiential learning, and 3,826 thereof are youth, and 261% is people with disabilities. This is in the main from funded by the teachers. The success indicator 4.3, which relates to young people trained and mentored to form sustainable new ventures, and at least 20% of new ventures in operation 12 months after completion of the program. Because currently we have 3,287 learners trained and mentors in new registration program, and then 1,446 of them is youth, and 99% is people with disabilities. If you look, honorable members, the success indicator, success indicator focuses on young people, but because of teachers are providing discretionary grants, they are indicating to us that they are also taking care of those workers that are being trained to also be trained to establish their own businesses. And of those companies that have been established, those that have been trained, 755 new venture creation business are sustainable. And then 332 thereof, which is 44%, are youth businesses, and 23% thereof is for people with disabilities. We also included the Untobongu Youth Fund program that relates to the funding that they get from the Department of Labor. Because Untobongu Youth Fund gets an allocation of 100 million or receives an allocation of 400 million from the Department of Labor for the financial year 2006-2007. And then Untobongu played a key role in the development of youth, and then the following contributions were made thus far. Supplier development training, aim of the program is to train entrepreneurs and 74 young entrepreneurs to establish new ventures based on the training that they receive. And then 100 beneficiaries assisted through the implementation of new venture creation leadership in 3 FET colleges. These 100 beneficiaries have not as yet established their businesses, but they are being trained in terms of entrepreneurial skills to the leadership in the 3 FET colleges. I think that is the last slide that we had, honorable members. We thank you. But maybe just to indicate, we still have a lot of challenges at the Department of Labor, especially with regards to youth and people with disabilities. And we're trying as much as possible to indicate or to engage with those people that are not meeting those set targets, because this is a collective results that we are providing to ensure that we remedy the situation and improve in this regard. Thank you.
Thank you for the detailed presentation. I'm sure honourable members do have questions. Welcome honourable members that did came late. Thank you for attending. Honourable members, do you have any questions? Before I go and keep my question, honourable Mark, we can start with honourable Marlene.
Thank you, Chair, very much. I was, you know, it was with great expectation that I came to this committee meeting, because what lies very close to my heart is the issue of the disabled. And I must admit that, I mean, you've got a very nice presentation, but, you know, I mean, words and paper is very patient. You can do anything with that, and I will not complain. But for me, it's really what is going on in practice and in reality. I've had the experience lately, one in Parliament, and visiting various government departments on committee meetings, on oversight meetings, visits, even going to the Reserve Bank, SARS, Treasury. And with all due respect, again, we've got 4 people sitting here, no one with a disability. So somehow, and I know that you have to start at home before you can really go and lecture other people and prescribe to other people. You have to start at home and get your own situation correct. At the Reserve Bank, they have also given us a fantastic employment equity plan for the future. Not a word about the disabled. Not a word. Not a single word. And I've confronted them on that. They've immediately acted to say, you know, they've got deaf people in the mint. And with all due respect, and I said to them, that disabled people is not only there to do the lowest work. And deaf people is not only there to do where there's a lot of noise. With all due respect. So, the immediate thing that I've asked myself is, fantastic, so what? How do you transfer this into practice and reality? Government has set certain targets in terms of the Employment Equity Act, in terms of 2% or 2.5%. municipalities. I don't think there's one municipality that complies with that requirement. I'm not sure that there's any government department that complies with that requirement. So that's why I said, you know, one must start at home. Because how can you prescribe to others when you're not doing it correctly? We've also seen the minister earlier in the year where she has said that you know, you're going to put more emphasis on extending the targets for employment of women. Fantastic. No, nothing wrong with that. Nothing about it, Abel. Because, you know, we are busy with that. And I often get the impression that, you know, we're busy with that, but we're not really focused on that. We've got other things that keep us busy. So my question really is, what do you really do to transfer what you've said here into realities and practices and actions and successes? Then further, you've mentioned about seminars that you've given, attended. Can we get a list of that to see, you know, what has been done to whom, so that at least we are informed in that regard? And then the other question for me is very important. We see in the broad-based Black Economic Empowerment Act that there's incentives in that code for when there's people with disability employed or involved in those Black Economic Empowerment transactions. But I never got the impression that that is a priority. I never got the impression that that is a priority. So somehow one must take what you presented to us and what is in the act into reality and in practice. I've been said many times that I think government has done fantastic to bring in fantastic legislation and to care for the people with disabilities. But somehow you walk around in the street and you go to businesses and companies, you don't see that. Somehow people still unfairly discriminate against the disabled. And I would really ask you, can I get a copy of the codes and the tags so that one can at least acquaint yourself in terms of, and you know, because you have mentioned about definitions. About the disabled and certain targets and many issues that you have mentioned. And one wants to acquaint yourself to see, you know, can you relate to that? Is this really reality? I mean, I know I'm not a disabled, but I've got fair empathy because I've got a 21-year-old multiple disabled child. And I also know that there's a difference between a limited disability, where you've mentioned about your glasses, where that's an impairment, is not a disability, and where you go on the steps towards severely disabled. So it's also, one must understand that. And I get the impression that in reality, people don't understand that. And if you don't understand that, you try to steer away from that. And if you steer away from that, you don't know about that. If you don't know about that, you do nothing about that. So somewhere along the line, I don't see really how to do this, and somehow one must try to address those things. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Moss.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, yes, I think it was a good presentation. But I think the presentation is not complete at all. I would like to ask one of these, one question where I think the presentation is short. Should the government department have different aids when it comes? And I think that caused for some confusion sometimes. The National Youth Commission would say a child or young person, or youth, is from the age 14 to 35, which means the children would be younger than 14. Now, if I look at your presentation, child labor in this country is not allowed, although it is also allowed. Children can work from the age 14 to 17, but the work must be bad or inappropriate work. That's what you say. I'm just saying, I think what we need to do is try and the race is confusion. That's why children leave school early to go and work. Sometimes just because of circumstances, sometimes just maybe they are lazy, they're not encouraged to continue with their school, which is what we need if we want to build this country. The CIPA, Children in Performing Arts, you give permission for them to participate in performing arts. To use just minimum wages, compensation. Are they being compensated? It's compulsory. Because they can easily be exploited. While they have permission to perform, they might not necessarily be compensated. You know, and some groups or institutions might make lots of money and exploit the issue. Maybe on that one. On the Employment Equity Act, I think there's a name that you used that you didn't use correctly. And I think we are very sensitive when it comes to work. So when a person says to me, I'm a crippled person, and he's not disabled, obviously I would see that as an offense. I think it's important to try and have some form of uniformity, you know?
Yeah.
You said earlier in your presentation that the Office of the Status of Persons with Disabilities, and I know that the OSCP, Office of the Status of Disabled Persons, not Persons with Disabilities, that's politics in the neighborhood circles, you know, so we need to have the office correctly. The effect is that you say that labor persons work, I have been to one. You say there's 2 years, one in camping, one in the bank. Oh, so you know that. Okay. How would you set up a factory like that? My constituency is not another place. But we do have the civil groups who come together to do initial work, we do sewing, teeth, crafts, and so on. But we just get together, say 4 times a week. And it assists, you know, because the parents or the families can work, and they must be there for a day. Because I know in my company, They have problems with material, you know, to buy stock, to keep them busy. The Department of Labor can assist. How do one go about that? My last question is, I think when you, I think you answer. But we do from time to time go to hospitals. I am, in particular, I'm a WCAK. I was injured on TV, so I became disabled. Especially in Cape Town, there are people who get injured on duty. Then they would wait for the Department of Labor to fund or to supply them with devices, whether it's a wheelchair or any of those kind of devices. Especially those who are severely injured, like a quadriplegic like myself, you can't use your hand. A wheelchair where you can push yourself almost useless because you can't push yourself. You need electric wheelchair, no shooting. But there are lots and lots of delays by the Department of Labor. You would find that at any given time, whether it's private or general, I'm referring particularly now to the good private hospital. Because the Department of Labor is supposed to see that those injured workers who are ready to go home should get the wages, for example. They would spend months waiting for a wheelchair. Now, the hospital for them spending the day was 1,500 a day. Meaning, for that person to lie in hospital for a month, it's almost 45,000 rand. Why the wheelchair would cost 30,000 rand? But the delays are definitely in the Department of Labor, in the WCA section, Department of the Commissioner of Office. That is a serious problem. One, the government of the department is wasting lots of money, and those money that they pay for to keep the patient there, check against its work. The whole world could have, covered the devices needed. So it is the inefficiency of the person there, the person getting what is traveling, integrate easier, quicker with society, because but now it's there, it also took for months and months. That has been a problem that I try to take up positively with the Department of Labor.
Thank you, Jefferson, and sort of for being late. I actually needed to set the car that I was running today. I did read through the presentation by yesterday, so even if I missed some of the presentation, well, did I miss the motivation? But then, Jefferson, mine will focus on young people in farming communities, where we know quite well there's quite a lot of exploitation. Whether the department has like your surprises, does it do surprises to some of these farms to check if children are not actually used to work? I'm sure we all know that many families, they actually even send young children to go, even to bear on the street, and they move it if they do not bring any money. To what extent is the Department of Labor also assisting in this? I know they will say it is social services, but social services, they also shift the blame to other people because fact that a person is standing at a robot selling or standing at a flea market selling, then I am sure that's labor, labor's responsibility. And also, Jefferson, the only employment that they focused on was regulated one. What about the unregulated one? Like, for example, the child prostitution, including young women who are in this field that is unregulated, that is subject to abuse and everything. Because I'm sure that is working, Jefferson. For an effect that they are in bars or in your ranch or they are doing street shows, that's where Jefferson. To what extent is the department also assisting in making sure that there is adherence to law in these places, Jefferson? Lastly, Jefferson, I want to check on the shelter's employment. You know where I come from, the way to the Friday morning, so, and there are people there who are working, Jefferson. But then I noticed that the department has set aside money. I'm not sure if they fund the shelters, and or do they establish the shelters, and then what happens if then a person is working in this shelter? Are they earning a minimum salary or a maximum salary? And doesn't that also have an impact? Because if a means test is being done by the Department of Social Development and then they discover that a person has got a salary somewhere that he or she gets, then it affects the disability legal fund, the money that they get from the department person. And lastly, Jefferson, just to check, to what extent has the department, I know it can, they can say it's a policy of government to say only 2% employment within employment equity for disabled people, but Bona, to what extent are they also making other proposals so that then we see a difference? Disabled people will tell you that there's nothing for us without us. And but to what extent are they also engaging them to say they need also to do away with this dependency syndrome, but they actually go and work in your normal working environment, of course the one that will be suitable for them, so that then now they start earning a living wage and not necessarily be trapped within this dependency syndrome that is existing within the Department of Social Development. Those are my only questions, Jefferson. And do they also, I know this one is protecting to women, and you're not in a agency for women, but you find there are issues of sexual harassment at the workplace. And I am sure men also get the very same problems. The difference is that there are no committees that deal with men pertaining to sexual harassment. Are they having a policy that assists all the employment agencies or workplaces to say these are, you know, more like a charter to say these are the symptoms for sexual harassment, and also encourage those various institutions to establish either a desk or offices or means to be able to deal with issues of sexual harassment. I know for a fact that if it is a man in a higher position, he is likely to harass women. But it also does happen the other way around. If it is a woman in a top position and there are her subordinates are men, she does harass them, but one, they've got nowhere to go where they can actually go and report some of these harassments that are actually happening. And they will call them, you know, commonly called the social TV, Mama Lab, something like that. Abosumoza, you know, they call them Abosumoza, and they get I'm sorry to use vernacular, meaning like younger boys, pretty young things. And these young boys, they get excited that they've got these big mamas that are actually taking care of them. And it's still linked to that of prostitution, Jefferson, because there are males who also offer this kind of services, and they are paid for them. To understand some of these things, a reputed person. I know I'm raising something controversial. Huh?
Thank you, Honourable
Faith.
Honourable Andrew.
Thank you, again, I just wish to apologize for being late, but we communicated this morning and now that I had to do urgent personal business in the morning. I must admit, luckily the whole presentation, I was only able to get the movie in front. The questions I want to ask, it relates to self-employment. One of the major problems with regard to service products in particular is those that are working there, and many of them are working there for many, many years, long before 1994, they were there working there. And certainly the conditions they work under is extremely problematic. For one, we all know that when they leave there, they will leave with nothing, absolutely nothing. There is no pension provisions, etc. Now, certainly, this is something one would expect the Department of Labor, the inspectors would be on the case of those that manage such institutions. I mean, there are quite a number in the Washington. In Atlanta, there's also one in Flint. You see, the problem with these kinds of shelters is that the workers, those who are working there, are doing a very, very clear that you must be grateful for working. Work, and we know in the past, work has been seen as a therapy, you see. And most of them earn a salary that's not more than what the disability grant amounts to. Most of them, in actual fact, earn the difference between the disability grant and what they get there, because it is argued that they're supposed not to work. And they are working there just to be kept busy, you see. However, the products that they are producing, the furniture they are making, are being sold on the open market at exorbitant prices, and the profit goes to those that manage and control those institutions, you see. And I know the Department of Labor always has this approach of, oh, we don't want to intervene because it's essentially a welfare case, you see. I know that because myself, I come from the trade movement. And institutions like Service Products is the one that we organize in the National Education Health and Allied Workers Union. You see, and I also know it because I am a former social worker and had many running battles with the management of these institutions, who in actual fact exploit disabled workers. And as I say, the Department of Labor have never really, the inspectors have never really come to the party to enforce a basic regulations there, so that those workers can also have the kind of protection that other workers have. So that's one area of major concern, and certainly change. I mean, myself and Comrade Moore has also briefly discussed this particular issue before, and I think between us, we think in our next program, we must find time. Mm-hmm. I know it will be the last term this year. But we must find time to visit some of these institutions. And I think Honorable Marais would next week also welcome such an opportunity to visit those workers and engage the Department of Labor around the conditions that we will find there, because the DCA would not be adhered to at all day, you see. Most have spoke about wage determination, those fall outside of that. The Department of Labor have never determined any wages in that sector as far as I know. Yes, in the farm, domestic workers, those are being done. It's been taken care of, say, one welcomes Another area of major concern, and I certainly hope that the Department of Labor has perhaps touched on this in taking us through this slide presentation, though it's not indicated in the slide. The Department of Labor is supposed to enforce, monitor the implementation of the Employment Equity Act. Honorable Maria made a very, very important point, and that is a delegation that is in front of this committee. It indicated there is no disabled person among the delegation. Now, certainly, it clearly indicates to us that perhaps the Department of Labor is also perhaps falling short of the 2% employment equity target that is supposed to meet. If it is, and certainly there's one department that I expect to have more than 2%, and that is the Department of Labor. I must admit that in our oversight in the Northern Cape, the person who is responsible for the disability focal point in the Department of Labor indeed was a disabled person, and he was fairly senior. He was not a junior person for that matter. He was a director level or deputy director level, you see. So on one hand, but certainly I hope the department can say to us, no, 2% is too low. We are approaching 4%. You see, that would in actually be a clear indication that you are showing the way. But more importantly, this department is also responsible for monitoring and enforcement our regulations in relation to CITAS. You see, now we know that in the CITAS, the issue of learnership, there is a particular quota, 4% must be disabled in the learnership program, but we know luckily there is not a single CITA that can clearly, in terms of the annual report, can proudly say that we have met that quota. They're coming up with all sorts of excuses saying no, but we are trying our best with the disabled that are being identified or enrolled in learnerships. They just come for one day and then they disappear, you see. Now, one would want the department to look at what are the barriers that in actual fact prevent, in that is the case, disabled people from participating. And one obvious barrier is the issue of access to public transport. And of course, access to the buildings where these things take place. Now, we don't want the Department of Labor to, in actual fact, condone the excuses that will happen of the seekers. We would want them to say to the seekers, be creative. If you have, on a limited, have identified or made provision for a particular amount of disabled people in terms of the quota, engage with the disability sector to find out exactly where those people will be coming from, what would be the obstacles in ensuring their continued participation, and deal with those obstacles, you see. An approach that says, yes, you are enrolled, but you must find your own way there. That is essentially saying to a disabled person, you must run the marathon. I don't care how you do it. If you finish it, then you will get your award. You know, that is a problem, because you are saying to them, stay at home where you are. You can't participate in this, you see. So what we are saying, what I'm saying, is that when one has to be flexible, you have to amend certain things to make it possible and feasible and practical for them to participate in these processes. And certainly, the minister saying that they would indeed take action against employees both in the public and private sector who in actual fact are not meeting the target, but certainly one haven't really heard of any action that has been taken against such employees, and perhaps we must start with the public sector We do not know if we have to wait for the private sector, because if we as government are at this point in time averaging 1% or less than 1%, then the question is, what is the Department of Labor doing with regard to that? It is indeed a major problem, because it's an indictment to your minister and to this very, very excellent policies that Honorable Maria raised earlier, that we have as a country. You are the enforcers, you are the monitoring agency, you must ensure compliance. And if there's no compliance, that means you are not doing your job with respect. So I think that is for me a critical issue. The opportunities for upskilling of disabled people, and I'm talking about the TIPAD, the other subject that you say, and then of course the issue of employment equity. And certainly I want to emphasize that disabled people should not be confined to a desk job, to a receptionist, to staff, telephone exchanges. That is an indictment on disabled people. I've been disabled my whole life. I wasn't born disabled, but I contracted polio as a child. And so there are many disabled people who, in actual fact, go to great lengths to achieve an education, who find themselves not in a position to access jobs, because if they access jobs, I met yesterday, yesterday I had a disabled workers with somebody working for the Department of Social Development in the Western Cape, a woman, for example, an African woman, came to meet me. She has a B.Juris degree. She has numerous diplomas in labor relations, etc. She was able to work as an organizer for a trade union movement, for PACAO. But the only offer she can get in social development is a receptionist, and is also a contact. So now, clearly, she's overqualified for such a job, but she can't find any other jobs, same person. So that clearly indicates and illustrates the mentality of public managers out there, that if you are disabled, they are really interested in what your capabilities are. But they just look at you and then they relegate you to a job where everyone that comes in will be able to see that this is a disabled person. But we want disabled person to be employed at a level of decision making. You see, that is where we want. We would, as a matter of fact, expect to see that the deputy director general is not a director general in your department is a disabled person. Chief directors, that is where we expect them to be a chairperson. So thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Faith, do you want to add something?
Yeah, no, I'll provoke by a member in the chapter. Maybe the department, I know they don't have this now, to send us the statistics in relation to the quota of how many disabled people do they have, according to their demographics, whether they're white, Afghan, and Indian, so on. And lastly, the chairperson to also maybe give us the list of these shelters employment that the actually subsidize, if not, so that, because they only mentioned 12, if we can get the names and where they are situated. I know one in Karankua where they also do cane work, but to what extent are they also, because even in there, there's a lot of exploitation. The very same members of staff there, they will tell you that they are not paid according to what they do. They do such wonderful things, Chaperson, and after they are sold, they don't get back that money. They are told, no, it goes towards the trust fund of running that institution. So if that can also, Chaperson, be investigated. If we can get the list, Chaperson, then I'm sure as we do our constituency work, we'll be on the lookout of some of these places and
If not, if the department can't do surprise visits, we'll do surprise visits for them. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Mark, I see your hand.
Yeah, on the target, I suppose that department do have those figures for taxes. Maybe what I need to hear from you, how many, well, what is the percentage of disabled persons in the Department of Labor? Percentage and the total. And each. And also in government. And when do you think when you reach the target? I know the minister is passionate when it comes to reaching this target. What efforts are you putting in place to try and reach this target? And then one question, other question, Chairperson, that I forgot to ask. The learning programs that you have, I would expect then the majority of people who come through there would be young people.
Yes.
But I think the highest percentage you have there, about 48%. I don't know whether it's success rate or. But I also would like to know, what is the success rate in terms of placing the digital jobs?
Thank you, Honourable Members. There will be another opportunity for questions, but from my side, I would like to ask, I just need clarity on the sheltered employment and the factories. I grew up in so many people that worked in the factories, in normal factories. Dead people work in factories, like Rexy Form and Ovo factory. But it's different to sheltered employment. Why do you call sheltered employment factories? Because I think there's a huge difference between factories and sheltered employment. But that's why we have the factories, but we keep in the shelter, the term for sheltered employment. Because we do have people with disabilities that are working in the factories, but that is not sheltered employment, because there's a huge difference between those two entities or those two employment sectors. Yes, some members said that it was very vague, and you said children must not work, and then you allow children to work. And I just need to ask about the children's modeling. You see so many adverts from Shoes, Edgars, that children are definitely below the age of 10 that are part of modeling. But you're talking about the performing arts, and really, I think that's really a difference if you look at modeling. But is that related to that? Do you allow that? Do you work with the parents or agencies that employ those children to be models under the age of 10? I have another question regarding the speaker, but I will definitely answer that in the second round of questions. But my next question is, the percentage for people with disabilities are extremely low, and you need to explain to us why these percentages are so low that you've displayed to us on your presentation. So, can you please give us an explanation, and then I will definitely have another round of questions, but you have now the opportunity to answer the questions asked by the Honourable Member. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We will try and share the question. I think there's a mistake out in the society. I think all of the members are making the same mistake here. That if an organization employs people with disabilities, they can only be put in the organization in the areas dealing with either people's disability and employment equity. That's why members are asking why there's nobody with disability here. People with disability, our approach is that people with disability should be mainstream in the organization. If you've got abilities to be a financial manager, you are employed as a financial manager. When Parliament wants a department to do a presentation, we don't have to take you out of your job to come and show you in Parliament that we've got a person with disability, come and be part of the delegation. The manager for Northern Cape is a chief director. She runs the Department of Labor Office. She's a disabled person. We don't have to bring her here for her to do a presentation. That, I don't think that's the most important issue. The issue is, does the organization create opportunities and space for people with disability and employ them in a meaningful position in the organization? I think that's the first thing that we needed to create here. But secondly, the question about the representation goes to the core of the issue of the definition of what disability is. My colleague will speak about his own disability. Because of your definition of what disability is, you look at us and say there's nobody disabled in the group. And that's not correct, members. This is exactly the same mistake that has been made us in the labor market that we want to deal with. But we will deal with that issue. Now, we were frank and open here about the attitude of employers out there in terms of people with disability. We said that you are more likely to find them as sleepers in the unskilled position than any other. That's what we said. But the honourable member is saying it's not something that we cannot see. We said it upfront ourselves. That in our investigation and inspection, this is what we find out in the labour market. And this is what we intend to correct. It's a long haul. It's not going to be easy. It needs the assistance of Parliament. It needs the assistance of Labour. We said that. It needs the assistance of employers. We've all got to buy in. Not only on the people with disability, we talk about employment equity as on women. Now, the honourable member talk about the incentives that are in the code. In employment equity, we say it's simple. It makes business sense to employ employment equity. If a company wants to succeed in the future in this country, they've got to ensure that they transform. And that's the incentive that is in the law in terms of that. There's no advantage other than that. That's the incentive that we say, employer, it may, you should regard the implementation of employment equity, the employment of women, the employment of people with disability as the core function of this company. And you should regard it just like you look on your share in the Botswana Bank of Change, you should be looking on your progress on the employment of people with disability, of women, and the other that is grouping because it makes business sense. That's what we're drumming to employment. We agree with the honorable member. We agree that we've got policies. We've got legislation. All of us have got the challenge of ensuring that those legislation and policies are respected and implemented. It's our challenge. It's the challenge of this Parliament. Any assistance that we can get, it's not easy out there. It's very, very difficult. It's not easy. The legislation as it stands is also not helpful. There are areas that we think that we need to be looking at to make it easier for us to be taking this issue forward. But that's not for debate now because it's still coming to Parliament. But there are areas that we think we need to be looking at. The copies of the codes and the text are available in our website. I'm sure the office secretary can easily download them, but if it's difficult, we can easily provide the copy. I don't think that the copy we can provide to our present office, but they are easily available on our website, all the text and the copy. Now, on the issue of who is a child, what is a child? Remember, we keep dealing with law. Parliament passed a law. We don't pass laws. We bring laws to Parliament for Parliament to pass. Your members pass laws. You pass a law on the age, the schooling age. You said no child should be out of school who is less than 15 years. That's the schooling towards the term. The year that the number of years that the child should spend in school. That's the law that we passed. The basic condition of employment access, if you're 15, you're less than 15, you should not work. You cannot be an employee. But obviously, work is defined in many ways. When you have said yes, when you ask your child to go and fetch for you water, that's work. She's working, she's going to fetch water. You're asking her to do work. You're not paying her for the work. You're asking her to do work. Now, is that, should we disallow that? Should we say no? Children should only look at TV and their books. We don't think that's what the law was intended for. Because we believe that we should bring out children who are capable of working in their other age. Now, in Kota we say, if I will go to the same child, I thought it was going to go and get it done. If the person cannot learn when she is young to wear, you are not going to be able to teach that person to wear when she is old. Therefore, that's the issue, the first issue that we raise. The second issue is we say, children who are between 15 and 17 can work, but the work should not be dangerous to them. Upbringing of the child, the schooling of the child. They can work, the law allows them to work. That's what the basic condition of employment is that you pass. It allows them to work. But there's a differentiation in terms of that. A child in the performing arts, even if you are lower than 15, you can work in the performing arts. Because arts is closer even to playing for children. Sometimes art is in singing, it means performing, it's closer to playing. The issue that we're looking at how similar is this to the child. Whether is it modeling, whether is it TV, advertising, singing, the child must ask for permission. The company that does it must ask for permission. The company must show that there's parental guidance when this shooting is taking place. There's parental guidance. There's somebody that obviously the company is not going to bring all the parents in, but there's got to be parental guidance during that process. That's what the issue that we're asking. You must show that in the application and that we do it. Now, on the issue of wages, what are they being paid? Remember, you have not yet passed a law in South Africa that has said the minimum wage in this country is this. We don't have a minimum wage in this country. We've got sectoral wages in different sectors, but we don't have a minimum wage. Therefore, where there's no sectoral designation or no bargaining council agreement, there's no law to enforce wages. Wages is by agreement. Now, I remember in the news, members of parliament were complaining about their own wages and increases. We couldn't interfere in that because there's no law that deals with wages.
Ah, there's not wages, it's salary.
Yes. Salary. I'm talking about also this situation. The basic condition of employment does not regulate wages. It regulates conditions. Now, in this industry, we regulate, when a child and the parent agree with the company that this child must be paid this amount, we can't come in and say you can't pay that amount because there's no law that gives us that authority. There's no sectoral definition that gives us that authority. The sectoral definition look at the condition. The issue of child labor deals with the definition of what child labor is and what child work is. We're not saying that children should work. We're saying where children do work, it should not affect their schooling, their development, and their health. Any work that does that, irrespective of where it is not allowed in terms of the definition. And ours is to implement the law as passed by Parliament. The issue of children leaving school, that, as I've already indicated, is governed by the Education Act that says children should be in school until this age. It's difficult for us then as a department to force and enforce that legislation. But I think the most important thing is that the challenge for all of us is that children are for the society. If we could have advice in for communities to ensure that children stay in school, if my next door kid is not going to school, I should take it as my responsibility to ensure that it's reported to authorities that there's this problem. We're not finding that. That is not happening. That's why you see children sometimes in corner streets, because communities have not accepted that your child is my child also. That if something wrong happens to your child, I must take the responsibility. But in terms of us as inspections in terms of departments, we can only do something when there's an employer and an employee relationship in the world of work. On the issue of surprise visits, inspectors do surprise visits. We've had cases here in the Western Cape of farmers taken to court on child labor. We've had a number of those cases here, about two or three of farmers taken to court on child labor issues. But the issue comes back to the same issues that when labor legislation is first thing, labor legislation is a product of argument, discussed network. It's agreed by the parties, it's agreed by labor and business. And the way we implement our legislation is that we depend on our social partners to ensure that they comply with the legislation. There's no doubt that the Department of Labor does not have the funds to put an inspector in each factor. I doubt that we ever have. But we depend on our stakeholders to uphold the law. We depend on them to be saying, Department of Labor, can you prioritize this factor? There are these issues. Can you do this? Assist us in the implementation of the law. We are discussing these issues with them at NEDLEC, at regional level, with all the parties and say, how can our stakeholders assist society and government in the condition of this law? It's challenging, not easy, it's difficult because they've got also their own priorities. Sometimes they do not prioritize aside the issues that we see as important as their issues. Those are the challenges that we're discussing with them. Now, this issue of sheltered employment factories, we need to explain this issue. The factories that we're reporting on here are factories that are owned by government. They are non-profit making organizations. They are financed 100% from fiscal. And these factories are situated in Limpopo, in local days, we've got factories, Cape Town, Durban, East London, Johannesburg, Kimberley, Pietermaritzburg, Port Elizabeth, Potchefstroom, and Pretoria. Those are the factories, they are 60, more than 60 years old. They were set up by the old regime.
being. To put at that stage, that's why I raised the issue of the wage, sheltered employment factories. That the intention then was obviously to hire people with disability. That's why the word says sheltered employment. They are government owned. We've got now a strategy to turn around the factories. We want the factories to employ more people. We said that. They employ 1,800 people now. We want them to employ more people. These factories, in the old days, as I said, they were part of, it was these factories and the prison, what is this, correctional service, who had preferred performance status with treasury. If the government department wanted to buy something that is produced in this factory, and this factory says we can produce this, then government was forced to buy from this factory, because it's a government institution. And therefore, the Department of Labor, of Education, would buy shares from this factory. That has been changed in 2002 for this factory. As a result, the output in the factory has gone down. The capacity, it's operating at the capacity, this capacity is operating of the capacity, a capacity of 20 to 40%. Therefore, the 60% capacity does not being used. And now, if they employ 1,100 people for operating at 20 to 40%, if they can operate at 100%, they should be able to employ four times the number that they are employing now. That's the first thing. Secondly, on the issue of whether you are entitled to grants, state grants, when you're working, is a concession that you're working, it's difficult for us to answer that, because state grants are administered by social development. But that's the thing, that if you are disabled and working in terms of that restriction, you cannot access state grants. It's difficult really to answer that. I wanted us to separate those factories. Then there are other factories or NGOs who cater for people with disabilities that are not necessarily part of government. They are not funded by government 100%. They might get a subsidy from social development, not the Department of Labor. They might get a subsidy from social development. Those are private institutions that are subsidized by government. And in both instances, the law applies. The only law that applies, unfortunately, would be the basic condition of employment test. Unless they are in an industry that is for the family country, like clothing, like metal. If they are in that industry, then they will be affected by the family country rate in that industry. Now, the department is in a...
Sorry, let me intervene here. Just looking for clarity first. I understand from many of us and myself, I think the self-protection is run by this NGO. That is my understanding. And then you're talking about the shelter and protection factories that were owned 100% by the government. I now understand the clarity now. So the people that is employed in the shelter employment factories, are they then getting more and are they being paid more than the disability grant? Or are they, for example, the NGOs, child employment, I know they get disability grants. Maybe, for example, they NGOs maybe get a tender, for example, from the AAA, for some African heroes, for example, to make the lunches for them. For example, I'm just giving an example. So for every lunchbox that they make, they get a 1 rand. Okay? So at the end of the day or at the end of the month, it's very, very little. But that has been added to their disability grant in the NGO sector. Okay? We know the NGO, we have the disabled people, we say, they will say, look, you get a disability grant, we can't afford and give you more. Okay? But we are employing you in this NGO sheltered employment to keep you busy. But now I just want to know, within your sheltered employment factory that 100% owned by the government, are they getting are they getting more than a disability grant? That's my question. Thank you.
In the factory that has got different ranges, not like any other person. In terms of salary, it's got written, I mean, grades like any other factory. Like a normal factory, they produce chairs. The chairs that you sit in, they produce. Obviously, if you are a welder and I'm a sweeper, the salary will differ in the factory. Therefore, there won't be people who are earning, the fact that nobody is earning less than the social grant in this factory. But there will be people who are earning far more than the social grant, depending on the job that they are doing in the government sector. In this sector, the one that I'm talking about, one of them I've said is Epin, the other one here is Davin. Those are financed 100% from this job. They do all the private work when they can, but they are financed 100% from this job. Now, I was trying to say now, on those that are run by NGOs, self-employment, welfare sector, we've got an investigation going on. The department is investigating the possibility of a sectoral designation. I'm not saying that it's gonna be a reality. There's an investigation that investigates the possibility of having a sectoral designation for the welfare sector. That's what we call it. And obviously that would include, so it does not include social workers that work in government. We're talking about the private welfare sector. We've got an investigation going. We might not come up with working conditions, including wages in that sector. That's the process that we involved in. I think I've clarified that question. But I wanted to clarify this. The factories that we're talking about are government-owned. They are financed by government, they were inherited by government, they were set up 6 years ago, and they are all over the country. And that's where we stand for people. And therefore, nobody can enrich themselves in those factories. They are non-profit organizations. They report, their annual report goes directly to the Auditor General. It's audited, and the Auditor General gives reports. It comes to Parliament here, they are reformed, as part of an institution that the government holds. It is separate from those that are not in attention.
Okay, no problem.
Now, there was a question then also about how do you set up sectors. I think I've answered that. We don't set up sectors. Obviously, if you approach organizations like Umsobo for funding, they do, I know, fund youth projects, if you approach the NSF and CETA for training on running factories, there are possibilities there in terms of funding. There are other institutions that are funding CETA and all those issues that do funding for CETA funding in terms of starting your own small business. Those are the opportunities. But the Department of Labor per se does not set up factories. But in someone who does assist youth in setup projects. If there are youth who are disabled who would want to set up a business, possibly they could be put in contact with Usobo to see whether the business proposal that is got is viable. On the issue of people who beg in streets, visits to prostitutes, I'm sure some of these guys wouldn't mind to be inspectors to go and inspect these places where prostitutes are. You see, the problem with labor law is there's got to be an employer and employee relationship in what you do. This is what labor law tells us. Now, if a person uses a child to beg in the street, if we're talking pure labor law, who's an employer in that situation? Is there an employer and employee relationship? Now, if we talk about the Department of Labor, the Department of Labor regulates the relationship between employer and employer and employer relationship. Now, in this situation, it's difficult because who is an employer to property? This is why we say it's more a social development issue than a Department of Labor issue when people
new children to bear in the street. That is why, even in our legislation, the issue about using children to commit crime is not a Department of Labor issue, but it is the police justice issue. But we do it jointly with them in the sectoral committee that deals with children. We say to them, Department of Justice, what are you doing for the children who are being used to commit crime? We say the same thing to social development. Social development, these children that are in street corners, that are used by their parents to beg, what are you doing? Now, in terms of their plans and programs, in terms of that intersectional child labor program of action that I talk about, they report and say, these are the issues that we will do to try and deal with this issue. Therefore, the point is, it's more a social development, but we can't say, well, it's got nothing to do with the Department of Labor, because the issue of children, as I said, is interdepartmental. When, as inspectors, we take out a child who's working in the farm, we say, you can't work in the farm. It can't end there, because you might find that that child is working because there's nobody else working at home. There's no other income. Now, if we just say, prosecute the company, the employer, and take the child out and go away, we're not solving the problem. This is where then social development comes in. This is where the Department of Education comes in. This is where the interdepartmental program action comes in to try and show that the problem is looked at holistically. We don't just take out the child. I'm not saying that children should be allowed to work, but I'm saying that we don't take out the child. On the issue of CC, we must apologize on this one. Unfortunately, we don't have anybody in our team coming from CC who is experienced in answering this issue. What we promised was to see CC is a question that was asked by a member on the delays the department is facing in making sure that wheelchairs are controlled in time so that people don't spend a lot of time in hospital and pay money unnecessarily. We will give this question to our CC section for them to answer in terms of what's their backlog, what are the delays, what are the issues, why is it that they give the report. We apologize for that because we don't have anybody there and we do, all of us do not have expertise around the areas of CC. We sincerely apologize for that. The issue of unregulated work, I've dealt with this issue. The issue of prostitution is not even about unregulated. It is still illegal in the country. It's still a criminal offense. Now, how do you treat an issue that is a criminal offense as also a labor issue? It's a tricky, difficult situation. Until that area is resolved by law to deal with this issue. I'm not saying that we should not go out and do inspection in places like, I mean, there was this ranch that was put on Caesar. It's a business. Caesar is a business. Within that business, there are illegal activities. We should be able to inspect the business, but we might not be able to inspect the illegal activities because when we're there, they're not going to be happening. But in terms of their books as a business, we should be able to inspect any business, any massage parlor, because it's registered as a proper business, and in the side there are illegal activities. We can't inspect the illegal activities because we don't have the expertise, we don't have even the legal backing to do that. SACP should be dealing with that. But we should be able to inspect them in terms of compliance with our legislation, just like any other employer. The issue of the Basic Condition of Employment Act, I've dealt with the sexual harassment. The list of the factories are listed here, we can give it in writing, those factories that are supported by government, where they are, we can even give them their actual address to make it easy for members when they want to go, we'll give that information later so we don't have to get where they are. that the issue about government target, I mean, government target 2%, is also the same problem if the target 2% for people with disability. It's not a target that is broken down in terms of labor. This is what, when the challenge is the target, it's just like it is. But, cannot say, we've got chief directors in our department, and the chief director is a top management in government, because the chief director is director, deputy director, chief director. It's head in line. When the chief director is head in line to head the organization before the top management. Present the government is at around about 1.5% combined with that target. I'm talking government wide. Now, I'm not able to say at all what level are those 1.5 all of them. I'm sure there will be challenge there in terms of the level, but the target is what level in terms of level. That's the challenge that they need to be dealing with. But our responsibility as a department, we say we need to ensure that both government and private sector comply with the law. Not only government, both government and private sector comply with the law. My colleague would want to ask and possibly explain if I'm not engaging his presence, his disability, this issue that I've raised on disability. My colleague will answer the questions around skills questions.
Adding to the question of disability, I've also come from the era of the shattered workshops and working on pretty boards on spaghetti boards. But I don't want to go, I come more from the blindness sector in terms of the disability movement. But I just want to clarify something or re-emphasize it. With regard to the means check, when we were dealing with salaries and wages, all our lives, people with disabilities were against the means test. Now the means test has always been a social development issue. But what the Department of Labor has done, they've worked with social development, and I don't know if people know Mantipi. Mantipi is a director in social development who is looking at this policy around the means test. Now, the means test has been there where you would find a lot of these workshops. A lot of these workshops. They've been limiting the amount of money because they didn't want people with disabilities to actually lose the money. So I know the Department of Social Development is dealing with that. With regard to the Department of Labor, in terms of statistics, the last that I've read earlier this year, although we can communicate to you, we are sitting around 2.8% of people with disabilities in the Department of Labor. In fact, in order to take the lead as the Department of Labor, we've actually set a target of 5%. Because initially what Cabinet set a target of 2.2% of people with disabilities in the civil service by the end of 2005. And shamefully, they've admitted that they have not reached that target. Now they've reset that target at 2%. Obviously, people with disabilities wouldn't be happy. But now, at least, people with disabilities can hold them to it because they say, previously you said it. You didn't reach it. Now you said you're setting it again. Let's see. But at the public hearings on discrimination, just a week or two back, actually last week, Friday, the DPSA say they are falling very short with regard to people with disabilities, and this is one of the areas they need to deal with. With regard to the definition of disability, and which is covered in the code and the tag, which has been on our website for many, many years now, so we were quite surprised there, actually. With the code, we are quite clear. What we are saying is that we engage with people when we are developing this code and these tags. We engage with the disability sector. First, the SASC, the South African Federal Council on Disability, and also DPSA, not the Department of Public Service and Administration. So right through, we've done that. And then the disability sector came across and said, look, we don't want the definition. Employers were coming on the other end, and employers were saying, hey, hold it. We need a definition, otherwise how are we going to manage it at the workplace? And people with disabilities came out and said, look here, if you require a definition for people with disabilities, why not define people who do not have a disability, and everybody else would be regarded as people with disabilities? So, the Department of Labor took the angle and said, look, let's provide a definition. But not something that is absolute, but it could be used as a guideline for employers to interpret. And that guideline that they used is that it is an impairment that is long-term, recurring, and substantively permanent. Then it went further, the definition went further, to kick out all those people that take time, because previously, in the old era, nobody wanted to have a disability, because they would have been discriminated against. Now, with affirmative action measures, people are finding every reason to have a disability. So they put in place, and you will see in our chatting and so forth, that it must not be correctable or controllable. Give you a good example. Give her all the glasses. A good one would be John D. Rhodes. You take John D. Rhodes. John D. Rhodes have epilepsy. You've got grandma. You've got different forms of epilepsy. Now, if you take John D. Rhodes, his epilepsy is controlled. So, if we had to take people like that and say, hey, these people are people with disabilities, then we are sitting with a problem, because we would not be reaching out to those people who have been traditionally marginalized. But we have a copy for the honorable member, which we will give you, besides the one on the website. So that was the first aspect that I wanted to deal with regard to people with disabilities. The second aspect that I want to get to is the issue that came across out there with regard to the dependency syndrome and with regard to childhood employment. Now, I know with names everything changes all the time, but just as much as we have employment equity, to reach out to people and see that people are just not in entry levels of jobs, we need to see that people go up and are represented in all echelons. The reality on the ground is that we have certain people down with such severe disabilities or challenges that the reality is that we would need to have these workshops, but use a developmental approach rather than that one that you can't do, you are pathetic and these people on the sideline. So I think these are important principles that we would have to inculcate as we go on. So I don't think what the honorable members are raising yet is anything different to what we are saying. We have one common challenge and one common fight to take it forward out there. And that also includes transforming a lot of those workshops. With regard to harassment, which was mentioned about sexual harassment and so forth. In fact, in that area, we cannot do much. The reason why it is prescribed in terms of law. And sexual harassment or any other type of harassment, in terms of the law, is seen as unfair discrimination. And the law is prescriptive. It says, firstly, employees must try and resolve those matters via internal dispute resolution procedure. Number one. After they've exploited all those areas and filled them, then they can take it to the CCMA. And the CCMA, in terms of the powers prescribed by the Act, can only conciliate on those matters. Thereafter, they can't even arbitrate on it. They would have to send it to the labor court for adjudication. The last thing I want to address on the issue of disability is the issue of cripples and that sort of thing. We will never use it in our documentation because we don't only consult with organizations from the disability sector. Many of us come from that sector as well. And it is pretty clear in our text what we say, things like cripple and so forth, we don't want. We view, for instance, we use people with disabilities now. That definition may change. Because even people with disabilities from the sector, not only national, international, they know for the fact that we have a moving definition. Because today we have people with disabilities, tomorrow that may change. We may be called disabled persons. But let me give it to you how it is in the text. The text says that a handicap, according to the definition in the dictionary, is something that is from the environment. The environment handicaps someone. Whereas when we say people with disabilities, what we are doing, we are recognizing that a person with a disability is a person first, then comes the disability. So the handicapping factor we put out there in the environment. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I will focus on the skills question. But first, one needs to reflect on the 2% versus what other means that the Department of Labor is initiating. And my colleague has also reflected that in terms of our internal policy in the department, we have a target of 5%, but also in terms of the strategy, the National Skills Development Strategy, we have increased the percentage to 4%, although we have challenges in terms of the implementation thereof. In average, it has reached 3%. The next issue that was raised by honorable members was with regards to the enforcement on learning programs. What is that we are doing in terms of failure? Because there are issues of access by people with disabilities in terms of the learning programs. This is an issue that we are addressing through the study that has been commissioned by the Department of Labor that is done by HSRC, because in terms of reporting, like this, they are only reporting to us in terms of their achievement, but the impact thereof and the failures we are not doing. But we will be getting information at the end of the October where HSRC will be providing us the research results, and then we will determine that. And that will assist us in terms of engaging further with teachers and ensuring that we live in a situation. The next issue relates to the focus on the strategy should be on youth and the issue around placement range as well. This is an impact study as well, but one needs to mention or reflect on the issue of youth. The first strategy, the 2001 and 2005, as I said during my presentation, the success indicator 5.1 on learning programs, specifically on learnership and apprenticeship, was focusing on youth. But the current strategy has been broadened up because it's not only focusing on youth, it's also focusing on other areas such as in rural communities where you, in the agricultural sector, the people that are being developed are not necessarily youth, but you find people who are adults who are involved in co-op and who require training. Therefore, the focus is not only on youth, but it's to develop skills so that people are sustainable, their businesses are sustainable. But again, what one wants to indicate as well is that the placement rate thereof, in terms of the strategy, we have commissioned, as I've indicated, a research that deals with the skill survey, and then that information will be available to us from HRC, and then we make it available to members. I think the last one, honorable members, that I picked up in terms of the question raised is with regards to why no percentage of people with disabilities in relation to their achievement. In our engagement with visitors, one of the things would be related to the impact in terms of research that we are doing. But in our engagement with visitors, is that visitors are trying their level best to ensure that they accommodate people with disabilities. And they are using the discretionary grant funding of the learning program to say to firms that you need to ensure that you have people with disabilities so that you qualify for discretionary grant. But there are certain sectors, for instance, in the financial sector, where employers continue to develop learners not using the grant, because irrespective of the get the levy grant or not, they continue to focus on other people like white people, white males and people who are able. But the sector, they ensure that the grants that the firms receive are only on those targeted for disabled groups. Thank you.
Thank you for your responses. Members, I will allow for another round of questions. Do you have the IT, the Amor Martin, on the end of this module? Okay, thank you. Sorry. Oh, sorry. The Amor Martin.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for the response. I do appreciate that, and it's good to see that there is someone with a disability, which underlines a factor and an experience that I've got, is that so often, and I must admit it happens more with people with deafness as a disability, is that you can't necessarily identify them in the street. So in other words, you don't see them. If you don't see them, you don't think about them, and it means that you don't have to do anything. So that's really a state of mind that people must get into. The one thing that you haven't responded to, and that was my reference to government departments, the fact that they are so poorly represented, and what you are going to do to rectify that. And also I've asked, what are you going to do to the information that is in the legislation, in the codes, that how are you going to transfer that into reality and into practice? I haven't seen that. Thank you for this document. I do think that we will have to deal with the issue of definitions in the future. I'm involved with support for the disabled. And I know that there's a distinct difference between deaf sport, people with hearing problems, mental problems, and then physical disability. So somehow we must try to streamline this, because our chairperson is a person that is with deafness as a disability, and she can obviously also, you know, comment on this. I have experienced how people within the community has responded to these things, and somehow my impression is it is not aligned with that 100%. So somehow we must try to listen to that more effectively. And then surely, I mean, you know, in your response in terms of the government departments as well, and municipalities specifically, which is closest to the communities. What are you going to do to make sure that at home you're making sure that things are there right before we're going to preach to other people to do as our own home is not doing? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I also thank
proper labor or things for this one. And like I said, they confirmed that the Department of Labor is beyond, is above the 2%. But you would know that I indicated more. I appreciate the target that they set for themselves as 5%. Certainly one would expect them to have an accelerated program to break the 3% margin and the 4% margin. Next year, this time, say, when they appear before us again, certainly we want to hear them say that they are at least at the 4%. Chairperson, the issue of mainstreaming, to me, you know, they say that the proof is in the pudding. You know, even if we speak about mainstreaming, we mean that disabled people must be placed everywhere. You see, and let me correct our analysis to say that looking at you from where we are sitting, there's no disabled person amongst your delegation. You've corrected that. But for us, that is very, very important. Because we often speak about mainstreaming, but mainstreaming everywhere except where we are, you see. And that is, I mean, I acknowledge the fact that they have a chief director that is disabled in the norm, can we point that out? But I actually hope you would say yes. We have it in Northern Cape, we also have it in another province also, you see, but you were not able to, or you didn't do it. I actually said that I recognize it, acknowledge it, but I hope that you would be saying to me no. No, we only know of one such person, there are plenty of them. I do not need them now to give us a rundown of where they are, but I think that is very, very, very important. This department is the most important department in the public service. When it comes to the issue of employment equity, when it comes to the issue of a right to work of disabled people, you are the ones that need to ensure compliance. You are the one that needs to monitor the issue of compliance. And you are the one that also needs to lead out discipline and punishment or rebuke if there is no adherence or compliance, you see. So in a way, Chair, we are extremely dependent on you. You are our assistance device, one can put it in that way. I must just say, Chairperson, that just GPSA, for example, in this province, and in the month of June, as part of our focus, a huge focus, we had a job hunting workshop targeting, we had around 30 disabled youth participating in that. And indeed, the Department of Labor was invited to come and make a presentation, which they indeed did, and we were very happy for that. And we indeed have endeavored that we will be working more closely with the Department of Labor in this province in trying to secure employment opportunities, skilling opportunities for disabled people in this province, in particular. So one acknowledges and one is happy about that. But the point we want to make, we want you to do much more than what you are doing at the current moment. The issue of a definition, yes, there is a definition that we as GPSA subscribe to. Our problem with the definition in the past relates to a medical model, you see, that defines the individual. The problem is the individual. We say it's not. It's the society that is actually the problem, you see. And indeed, we all know that as a country, we have ratified the United Nations Convention on Disabled Persons in the city of Basel's very parliament. And here, you know, we have had a meeting with Esther Park last week, trying to find out exactly from him how far are we as a country with that ratification process, because Parliament has ratified it, and we would want to know whether we would be among those countries that indeed are worldwide known to have not only adopted it, but have clearly made it an instrument of one thing in this country. And indeed, you as partner of labor will play a critical role in that. I've mentioned the right to work of disabled people. You are the ones that you have to ensure that that right becomes a reality. You see, it's not an utopia, it becomes a practical reality in this country. Indeed, one is happy with regard to the CITAS, but also not so happy. We know the CITAS have an important role to play in upskilling the development of workers in general. We indeed are not satisfied as a committee and myself as a person in the sector involved in the organized disability sector. We are not happy with the targets that have been reached to date. Chairperson, we know last year, again in youth month, we had a focus in Parliament where a number of speakers and partner of labor came to make presentations. They were there indeed, and clearly we have heard a lot of excuses from those CEOs of the CITAS explaining their difficulties in ensuring or reaching the target of 4%. You see, what we are saying, we don't want to hear apologies or excuses. We want it to be flexible. You see, we want the Department of Labor to ensure that they indeed become more creative, those CITAS, that they indeed comply with the targets set. Otherwise, the same people will completely be not only on the fringes, they will be completely excluded as a person. Because we have to take affirmative action in ensuring that disabled people are accommodated in mainstream. Yes, we met with Uzubumi Youth Fund and we made it very clear to them. The fact that they were able to say, when it comes to women, that barrier, that is cut up phase of say 35, and being that ceiling has been lifted, we welcome that. That now women that are older than 35 can also access the very same services that any other youngster can access. We welcome that. But we say you must do the same for the disabled. Very, very clearly. And we also made it clear to them, to Marusi, that yes, indeed, we appreciate and acknowledge what you are doing today, what you are doing, you are actually stretching the barrel at this point in time. You must do much more than what you are doing currently. So we, while we acknowledge good things, we are not satisfied with the end result at the current moment because of the fact that disabled people have been all these years being discriminated against. They've been made welfare cases. They have the capacity, the ability to contribute to the reconstruction and development of the country. And what we must do is to create opportunities and remove the barriers that have blocked them to date, Chairperson. And as I said, you may think that one, in particular myself, are hard on yourself. It's not the case. It's not that you are such a strategic and important department to take disabled people completely out of this fringe where they have been to bring it into mainstream society.
Thank you, Honourable Andrew.
Honourable Faye? Thank you very much. But then I still need to make a follow-up on the racial stuff. Not that it's never close to my heart. But
But Chairperson, I think I raised it on the angle to say there are a lot of young women and young men employed in this sector. And the definition of what the officials say, that it must be an agreed contract between an employer and employee, that's how people always find the post to get away with it. Because they will say, according to the basic conditions of employment, it must be an agreement between an employer and an employee. So if the department has been able to set in place their sectoral wages, why can't they do them the same, even with this kind of employment deficit? It's a fact. People are working in this industry. Whether legal or illegal, they are doing it. In actual fact, it is the fastest form of making money. If I was not a parliamentarian leader. Because I know the day Jefferson. You see, not Jefferson, I'm using that as an example. Let me have contact with a parliamentarian from any dinner. If I can go to this place as a person, I can be very, very rich. It takes only my looks to make money. You see? And a lot of young women, Jefferson, even those that are at tertiary institutions, that's how they make money. That's how they make money. Young men, they offer their services to older women. That's how they make money. And there is a person somewhere who controls them, who employs them, and deploys them to ever need the service.
The pimps, yeah.
The pimps, yeah. I was looking for that with Jefferson. So at the end of the day, they are employed. They are offering a service. And that service is remunerated. I am sure Jefferson here, when we talk of labor issues, we're talking about where there is remuneration. I offer, I'm a service provider, you pay me for my services. That is our agreement. It can be never, Jefferson. So the Department of Labor has got a lot of work to do. You can't let other sectors get away with it, especially because we're talking about young people here. And all persons like Mare, I'm not sure that he can offer a service. He will be unemployable in that sector. But I'm sure more can be employable. He looks young. And he can offer. So me now, I want to propose that the department also look at the sector. And the fact that you go in there to look at their books, it means you recognize that they are employers. And you can't turn a blind eye away from things that are happening within that institution. Because Oxalayo, you are there to check their books. It means you recognize them as an employer. And where there's an employer, there's an employee. Yeah, you laugh. So, Jefferson, the department has got a responsibility. Don't let some of the things get away and say, no, they've fit into criminal activities or whatever. There's nothing wrong in also the department suggesting that there should be a decriminalization of the sex industry. You go to your Netherlands or Sweden, you've got your red light restrictions. They are legalized. People, they even pay tax for performing that kind of work. So it means the department, you have a task. In your breakaway or your strategic plan or whatever, this issue must also be on your agenda to say, let's also target this industry. We want a report next time on how far have they implemented this strategy. They must not just go away back to Pretoria and sit down and relax. We want a report purposes. Yeah. Two purposes. On the issue of NGOs that offer shelter employment purposes, I think the department here can't just hang their hands in the air or wherever, and say it is the social welfare responsibility. Bottom line, you've got disabled people who are in these shelters, although first private. Because then the next thing, that's how you get a lot of exploitation by many companies that come overseas. They come into South Africa and they come, employ our people, pay them 20 rand or 40 rand per day, all because they know that the Department of Labor will say, no, it is a private kind of a situation. So meaning, the Department of Labor won't come in. They will simply come in and just check, even others, I'm sure they're giving bribery, just to turn their blind eye, not see some of these things happening there, that are illegal, and our people are actually exploited, all under the menu, which is, they are looking for money, Chaperson. Just like, I'm so Chaperson to smuggle some of the issues, just that I don't sit on the labor committee, so I get this opportunity to engage with labor. Just like you go to a petrol station, Chaperson. The trend now is that you find foreigners are working in petrol stations. It means somebody has noticed that there's a niche or there's a loophole now. They are only employing them so that then they either underpay them and they know at the ultimate end they won't give them other benefits that an ordinary South African who knows his or her rights won't necessarily get, or because they want employment, Jefferson. So in NGOs, the same thing, Jefferson, especially the ones that are dealing with disabled people, Jefferson. I am sure the department needs to, if not putting their fingers, they must go in there with their feet. Chaperson, I was going to use the Zulu phrase, so your interpreters won't be able to interpret what I'm going to say. Go in with their feet. I will make it in English. Yeah, they understand me. Yes. Because you are letting people to get away with it. All because you say they are private and all those things and all those things. So the department needs really to be on their feet. We depend on them or we rely on them to make sure which is employers, they stick to these laws that are actually putting in place, Chaperson. Including your domestic workers, Chaperson. I'm sure once a person becomes disabled as a domestic worker, they don't get employment because they are useless to the boss and the missus. So it means the department needs also to come in and start putting their feet also in the domestic sector to say, how many disabled women or men have you employed within your design? Including, that's why I said to the person, I don't sit on labor, so I use this opportunity. Domestic workers, especially those that work for even Jews. Right now, it's this Jews festival or whatever. They work extreme hours, the person, and nobody seems to care. Now, I'm applying Sonisha Award 109. People are just complaining. They work long hours. The only time they're giving off is only on a Saturday afternoon. A Sunday they work. And it's like, really we need a surprise visit, a door-to-door surprise visit. Some of those houses there around the morning side, especially DA strongholds. I'm sorry, this DA strongholds. DA strongholds, Chaperson, they have a lot of exploitations because it is where domestic workers work. And they actually tell them that does not apply here in my house. Yeah, maybe there in an ANC house, it works not here in my house. And people work long hours, Jefferson. You go even to your land, you find a person has to clean an 8-bedroom house. Sometimes they are pregnant, and they're told they have to go in and work. They work as early as 5, they knock off as late as 8 o'clock in the evening. All because people they know which is labor will never do surprise you. So I think it must be some of the things that you do. Surprise visits and make sure that these laws that are putting in place, people adhere to them. So that is what I wanted to challenge the department on today. They can't just throw their hands in the air and say, they are illegal issues. Chaperson, these ranches, there are a lot of exploitation. Even in the street, one day you must just follow a car that has picked up a young man or a young woman. And where you find them in action, you just say, this is an agreement between an employer and an employee. Is there a better wages here, Chaperson? Where they're actually being charged, they say, without the condom, they charge 150. With the condom, it's 50 rand, Chaperson. So that's cheap labor in other ways. Thank you, sir.
Spoken about the issue of work for the inspectors in the Department of Labor. I would like to add to that one. But I'm not targeting the red light district. On a serious note,
they all issue the principle of reasonable accommodation. At times, are not adhered to, and it makes it actually very difficult for disabled people to function in a workplace, you see. Because the employee is saying, yes, we've employed you. But we're not making any changes to the working environment. In order for you to in actual fact, be able to play your particular role there. I would wish that the Department of Labor, I wouldn't want them to say, no, it's not our job, etc. They spent an inspector to chamber labs in the Western Cape, which is foreign, where a disabled worker, Lahona Solomons, in actual fact, is close to, if not already, near breakdown, you see, because the employer there, in actual fact, is making it literally impossible for her to function as a worker. I can just cite one example of cruelty that she was subjected to. The same power she's been brought to foreign by Carla Alban. And now anyone who's familiar with the Timberlands will know there's quite a distance from the old national road into the institution itself. Now even for a normal person, an able-bodied person, it's a long walk. And for somebody who is physically disabled and have calipers on both your legs, that is an extra fact, a very, very, very long walk. And in situations of rain, tempers, it's extremely, extremely difficult. When you reach your office, you are soaking wet. Now, what they did, they initially had the agreement that she can be brought into the building and parked as close as possible to the entrance of the building where she's situated. They just suddenly changed it without informing her, etc. And the security guard at the gate was then instructed that the owner cannot come in here with a vehicle. It's only authorized vehicle that must enter here, which means that he must now get out at the gate and then walk to the building. Say, as I said, it's a long, long walk. Say, I will then send somebody there and investigate this particular matter, but also try to educate not only the human resource manager, but also the director that's in charge, chairperson, because at the moment he's allowing himself to be led, of course, by this human resource manager. And it seems that this human resource manager have made up her mind that Lahona is no longer welcome at that institution, chairperson. She is probably the only disabled person in that big, if I speak under correction. But certainly, they are clearly in violation of this principle of reasonable accommodation, a chairperson.
Honourable Money.
Just a small one, just on what my colleague said, she will be surprised that there's no DA people living there anymore, just ANC people living there. But I would suppose that part of this committee will be disregarded.
No.
Okay. Honourable members. I just need to add my question. What Honourable Faith said, if you said that you can only look into where there's a relationship between the employer and the employee, then we should be concerned about what Honourable Faith said, about the sex workers industry that needs to be investigated, and also the trafficking of children, because there is a relationship between the person who brings in that woman, and now you're saying he's not involved. in that unlawfulness. So you need to work with the South African police. You can't tell us here where there's no relationship, you do not take responsibility. There is a relationship like Honourable Faith has mentioned. I would like to bring up the matter regarding the fetus. We received an email from Kwaza, that's the Quadriplegic Association. They have been working with the services fetus, but for some reason, the services fetus refused to give certificates to those learners that completed the training course. For 2 years, they've been waiting for their certificates. And I have the email right in front of me with the reason. So I would like the DDG, the person responsible for the fetus, are you aware of this? We all know that there was agreement with Kwaza on this matter, how to make things accessible for those learners. If they need to, they made other arrangements if the building was not accessible to meet those requirements. But for some reason, the services teacher refused to give those certificates to those disabled learners. They cannot establish their own businesses because they do not have those certificates. Will the Department of Labor do follow this up? Like you heard from Honourable Andrew as well, they ask for flexibility. If there's a transport problem, how can the Department of Labor assist? How did you advise your seekers on this matter? Maybe because the low percentage that you have, that you presented to us, maybe this is the reason, because they're not getting the proper advice. All the seekers really trying to support and encourage and learners with disabilities and to be part of their program, but like Kwaza was mentioning, they're experiencing barriers. So I think you need to work with the CETA to make sure that those barriers are then taken away. I'm giving over to the department to respond. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try and answer. I'll try to disclose this time so that people can really understand what this is. We've answered the question of government department. Answer that question. The answer was that we said the government target was to defend the government in 2006 performance level of around about 1.5. It's not meeting its target. That is answer. Our attitude is our home is South Africa. We're concerned about the performance of all the role players in employment equity. We're not privatizing private sector, we're not privatizing government. When we say we must clean our home, it means all those affected by the law, we must ensure that they do. And we said it's not an easy task, it's difficult. We say we depend on employers. When I say employers, it includes employers in the public sector. Employers, we depend on labor, trade unions, to play their part and show compliance. On our side, we started the process. We started the process of the DG review system. We said this year we're taking around about 33 companies who are listed in the Johannesburg Stock Exchange to see what's happening in there. There's no doubt government, if you compare government and private sector, government has moved a big way, even with disability. But we can't resolve that much. I agree and accept that. But when you compare to what the private sector does, the private sector is nowhere in all the common industry. But I'm not saying that what the government is done is enough. Therefore, what we say is, we're not targeting the private sector, nor ignoring government. This is law. We've got to ensure that all the public sector is meeting.